Amanda Slim.
And I'm Rachel Hampton, and you're listening to ICYMI.
In case you missed it.
Slate's podcast about internet culture. And Candace, welcome back to the grind of late-stage capitalism after a very well-deserved week off. How was it? What did you do?
It was good. I actually was in Vegas playing poker from sunrise to sundown with Bruno Mars. Have you heard of him?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Well, you know, we played some slots. We hit the blackjack table. I blew some dice for him. And, you know, he does now owe me $50 million.
Ooh.
He allegedly does not owe MGM $50 million, but he does owe me.
Honestly, I love that. When he pays you back, you're going to have a great time. I did see that in the headlines, and I thought whoever is owed that $50 million could just cash it in the form of an album. And that would be the entire world receiving $50 million worth of music. A lot has happened while you've been gone, though, while you have been becoming a debt master.
Oh.
The Oscars happened. Swan Arlo has been crowned Horny Twitter's new lawyer boyfriend.
Yes.
Kate Middleton has allegedly been spotted at a farmer's market carrying a plastic bag.
Yep.
But none of that is important right now, because what I would actually love for you to do is tell me, have you been watching anything good? Have you been enjoying anything? Have you been in Photoshop, perhaps, editing some photos for Duchess?
Yeah, and I will share the metadata. But on top of subscribing to Meghan Markle's new lifestyle brand, American Riviera Orchard, I would love to talk about a show I've been really, really liking. It's called The Gentleman on Netflix. Firstly, Theo James. Thoughts, Rachel?
You know what the first thought in my head is going to be. What a beautiful man. What a fine specimen of a man. The only project of his that I've engaged with is one where you don't see his face. He voiced a character in Castlevania, which is a Netflix adaptation of a very poorly named video game. The adaptation is incredible, though. 10 out of 10 recommend. Richard Armitage also voices a character. But Theo James, he's most well known for the off-brand Hunger Games, right? Divergent.
Yes, I love Dollar Tree Hunger Games, aka Divergent. And you also might know Theo James from The White Lotus, but I personally didn't like that performance, so we're going to skip it. So let's talk about Divergent. Theo, he plays 4, like the number, and he's like this bad boy with a heart of gold for Shailene Woodley. And that movie was so formative for me. It was an awakening to the point where I was 12 years old, and I said to myself, says I, Theo James is the most beautiful man I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
And I said it when I was 12. I'll say it again now, because he is so good in this new Netflix show. It's from Guy Ritchie, and the show is like Bridgerton meets The Night Agent meets Downton Abbey, which Theo was also in. And Theo plays a like modern duke who finds out that his dad has been growing weed underneath their estate.
Oh.
And the mob boss of this operation is a woman named Susie Glass, who has this killer winged eyeliner, but she is the boss. He is her employee. And he basically spends 8 episodes killing people to protect his family, his property, his weed. And I love this show a lot. It's very funny. And I walked away being like, I think this is probably the best show I've watched since The Last of Us.
Oh my God. High praise. I mean, weed, the mob, Theo James.
Yes.
3 of the things I'm most interested in as an observer. This sounds very up my alley. I'm going to add it to my list. You did a great job recommending.
Yay. And what about you? Like, what are some things you've been into?
Okay, so I have been sick for the past few days, just with like a little spring cold. So I've mostly been comfort watching, which means lately I've been trending towards the highly specific genres of Adam Sandler movies and movies where suburban couples end up having to solve a crime.
Sure.
And then the overlap of the two. So I've watched Murder Mystery 1 and 2.
Great.
With Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston, which unfortunately are some of the only movies I've cried from laughing at. also in the Adam Sandler genre, I watched Grown Ups 2. And in the non-Adam Sandler genre, I watched Date Night with Steve Carell and Tina Fey.
Yes.
Which is a beautiful relic of the 2010s and has the craziest list of cameos. James Franco, Mila Kunis, John Bernthal, Jimmy Simpson, Common, Taraji P. Henson, Mark Wahlberg are all in this movie. But I think my favorite in this genre was probably Game Night, which I had never seen before, and I paid $4.99 to rent.
Oh my God.
And it was worth it. It stars Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams playing a suburban couple who, you guessed it, end up having to solve a crime.
I mean, I've heard multiple people I trust who would die for Game Night. So that's a very good pick. But let's go back. I love that you are in your Adam Sandler era. I mean, please tell me that you are wearing Kirkland signature basketball shorts with a huge t-shirt on right now.
Basically.
Ah, I mean, Adam Sandler is a formative person in pop culture. I really liked his film with his daughters, You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah. Like, great taste. I love.
Yes. The thing is, I grew up with a brother who's about 3 years older than me. So a lot of my comedic tastes have been shaped by the era of like Norbit.
Sure.
Benchwarmers, Waterboy, Blades of Glory. And the thing is, Adam Sandler is great at what he does. And we all found this out when he did Uncut Gems. We were all like, oh, my man can act. But that is clear, even in some of his less critically acclaimed work. And a lot of his later career is really just very sweet, funny, dumb movies about family and marriage where he gets to work with a lot of his best friends.
Yeah.
And it's just exactly what you want when you're sick. But that's all of my Sandman love. We have a show to do. We have to catch you up on all the internet you missed while you were gone. And so on today's show, we're talking about vasectomies and parole officers telling you to delete your social media. And we'll do that after a short break. Hi, y'all. Hope you're enjoying today's show. If this is your first time listening to ICYMI, then welcome. We're thrilled to have you here. In case you missed it, that's what ICYMI stands for. Also, our show comes out twice a week, on Wednesdays and Saturdays. You are currently listening to our Wednesday episode, our past Saturday episode, where I was joined by Jonquilin Hill of Vox's Politics and Policy podcast, The Weeds. We discussed how the secret third host of Love is Blind is Reddit.com. Yes. Check it out. And we're back with vasectomies, which really have been a real topic of conversation lately. The only successful couple on the most recent season of Love is Blind had exactly one conflict that we saw. And it was that the dude apparently didn't know that vasectomies aren't easily reversible and that birth control can wreak havoc on a person's body, which is a real indictment of American sex education. But we're not here to talk about Love is Blind again. Well, we are, but it's not only about Love is Blind. We are here because Hillary Duff's husband, Matthew Koma, got a vasectomy on Monday, March 11th, and in a painkiller-induced haze, gave us some of the funniest Instagram content since T-Pain discovered the hidden DMs he'd been accidentally ignoring for years. Do you remember this?
I do remember this. Did he ever get back to you? No comment. Got it.
No comment. I mean, T-Pain does make me very happy. He is an underrated gem. He is an absolute cutie. He's given us some of the most iconic club tracks of our short lives. And he recently released an album called On Top of the Covers. Great album title. Because it's an album full of covers of songs like Don't Stop Believin', Never Too Much, and my personal favorite, Tennessee Whiskey, sung obviously by none other than the legend himself, T-Pain. I will now be using this opportunity to make all of you listen to this cover. You're welcome. Too far gone. You're as smooth. Tennessee Whiskey. How could you not like him? But unfortunately, we're not here to just talk about T-Pain. Candace, I heard through the grapevine, also known as the ICYMI production channel, that you, quote, weirdly have a lot of thoughts about Matthew Koma pre-Hillary Duff. End quote. Now, I didn't know this man's name until last week, and I now know him as Hillary Duff's husband. And I did find out while doing research for this episode that he is allegedly a singer, songwriter, producer, and DJ who wrote the banger that is Clarity by Zedd, which is a song that I absolutely go crazy for whenever it's played. But other than that, the only thing I know about him is that he got a vasectomy last week. So please enlighten us on who this man is.
So you might know Matthew Koma's work if you were a Zedd fan in like 2012, 2013, because he worked on Clarity. And then he also sang on two pretty big songs with him, one of which was Find You, and the other is my favorite, Spectrum. He also did Wasted with Tiesto, and I think at the time he was like the Jack Antonoff of the Obama era. He was just everywhere. But let's get to the facts. All right. I am not only admitting that I was a Zedd fan. Now you know where the chain smoker's disease I have came from. But I am also bringing you the most important information because Matthew Koma used to date Carly Rae Jepsen.
No.
So in 2019, when I saw that he got married to Hillary Duff, I was like, what does this troll have to capture not one, but two pop princesses?
Okay, I don't know if I've ever said on this show, but I am a Carly Rae Jepsen stan. Yes. I love her music. Yes. She is incredible. What?
I know.
Wow, that is really important context. The context, it's important because he went on a very legendary DM spree this past week. And I think it's good for us to know where he came from, where his roots are. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, our man Matthew, he got a vasectomy on March 11th. And it seems like good timing, given the fact that his wife, icon, Hillary Duff, is pregnant with her fourth child and the couple's third together. Giving birth four times seems like enough for any person. I don't even want to give birth once. So in a radical act of male contraception, Matthew went to get a little snip snip and apparently was feeling really, really good about it. And thankfully, he shared every moment of this journey on his Instagram story. Besides the actual snipping, I don't think Instagram would allow us to watch surgery on the platform, but who knows? The journey started with a selfie in a car with the caption, "It's vasectomy day," with 6 exclamation marks. I counted. He showed us his vasectomy fit check and informed us that he'd taken a Valium and he was, quote, feeling hyped. He also told fans he was, quote, very high and had, quote, never taken a drug in my life. The thing is, I've never taken Valium before. I have done drugs, most of them legal. But I do feel comfortable saying there's nothing quite like a first high. And from what I understand, Valium's already a pretty great experience. Do I believe that a singer, songwriter, producer slash DJ has never been high before? I don't know.
I was actually going to say that, too. I don't believe him. But I guess when you're on Valium posting IG stories, anything can happen. Now, here's the thing. I can imagine that this was in his head, like, informative PSA, right? Because I think my only, like, visual representations of vasectomy life was, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine when Jake Peralta drove Terry Jeffords to, like, his several vasectomy appointments. Modern Family, Phil Dunphy driven to his appointment by Jay. By the way, both shows, neither ended up getting their vasectomies. So what's going on there? Anyway, Matthew Koma is on Valium.
Matthew Koma is on Valium, and he's going to follow through, unlike those two clowns you just mentioned. He's going to get the real snip snip. So he's riding high on Valium and never having to wear a condom again. He's even gone so far as to say, it's honestly not bad at all. Like, better than going to the dentist for sure, which... I have questions that won't be answered in this recording. Things start taking a turn when Matthew goes from 10 out of 10 recommending vasectomies to watching everyone's favorite intoxicated watch, Love is Blind. And he does what all of us do when we're watching reality television, which is look up the cast members on Instagram. Mm. But Matthew took it a step further and decided to DM the cast. And most of the cast responded. And I gotta say, if the husband of Hillary Duff DM'd me high on Valium about an episode of our show, I would also immediately respond. So this is the only similarity between me and the cast of Love is Blind.
Yeah.
My favorite part of this, besides the fact that a lot of the cast responded, is that Matthew posted the screenshots of his messages to his Instagram story so we could all follow along, because Matthew is a benevolent king.
Now, I did hear that this season of Love is Blind did feature some, like, abortion talk, vasectomy mm-hmm. talk, birth control talk. Like, mm-hmm. what do you think came first? Love is Blind season 6 or Matthew Coma's vasectomy? Like, was this inspiration or coincidence?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You were correct. As I said, the most important conflict for one of the couples was who's going on birth control here.
Oh.
They figured it out. Presumably, they're still married. Spoilers, sorry. Mm-hmm. But everyone watching was like, do condoms not exist in Charlotte, North Carolina? And then I also thought about post Roe v. Wade, North Carolina. And I was like, you know what? Actually, this is probably a good discussion to have, but without the proper context. All to say, I think it was actually a coincidence, which only makes it better. But let's get into these DMs. I'm going to start with some of the DMs that seem not to have gotten any response, which were sent to Jimmy and Kenneth. And those names only matter to you if you're one of the people who watched. If you didn't, just know that both of these men, I would say, are considered kind of villains, like most men. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. To Jimmy, Matthew says, quote, Jimmy, man, you can't friend request the other girl. What are you doing? Correct. Mm-hmm. My man, Matthew, correct. To Kenneth, he says, ugh, you let me down being on your phone so much. Which is also correct. The reason Kenneth broke up with his girl is because he couldn't get off his phone. I'm not even joking. That was a storyline on this show. Now, the next DMs, Candace, I would love if you would do me the honor of dramatically reading them with me. I think that would be really fun.
Oh, my God.
Great.
Yes.
Okay, do you want to be Matthew Coma or do you want to be a white man named Jeremy who spells his name with an A?
I want to be Jeremy.
Oh, okay. All right, let's go. I'm Matthew Coma. No, dude, you spelled your name wrong and did your girl wrong.
Well, I didn't spell my name.
Fair. But the girl! Don't spoil the ending for me, man. I'll never forgive you. And then there's a photo of Jeremy's house that Matthew posted to his story, and the house is suspiciously clean. And Matthew's caption reads, oh, we're back. This guy's house says serial killer. Jeremy responds to the story.
Bro, laughing cry emoji.
Wait, is that your house?
It is. I'm a bit of a clean freak.
It's very clean. Like someone who could clean up blood well.
I'm pretty sure Laura said that day it gives American Psycho. Great movie. Not a great comparison.
Yeah, that's a tough compliment. Let me know if you want to FaceTime.
End scene.
What did you think of that exchange? What would you do if Matthew Coma DM'd me? Let me know if you want to FaceTime.
So embarrassing. So embarrassing. Because am I wrong? I kind of read this as like slightly hostile of like, I feel like Jeremy didn't appreciate the accusatory tone Matthew was sending him. Am I right?
You're correct. Jeremy has been getting a lot of flack on the internet because he's a piece of shit. This was one of many flacks he's been getting.
Yeah. So why would you want to FaceTime with a hater?
I mean, a famous hater? I don't know.
Okay, see, that's already very generous to vasectomy Coma. Okay.
You're actually so right. You're so right. But the thing is, Matthew is literally asking and telling the cast the exact things that all of us viewers were wanting to ask and tell. So if you think about it, he's kind of the people's megaphone. This is exactly what I would do if I were minorly famous and had a verified Instagram account. Mm-hmm. Which becomes even funnier when he DMs Johnny, a.k.a. the man who didn't know vasectomies weren't easily reversible, and says, I don't know how it ends yet, man, but get a vasectomy. They're so fun and easy. And Johnny, who has been described as a golden retriever, responds in all caps, that's what I keep hearing. The next thing is a photo of Matthew FaceTiming Johnny.
Oh.
And the screenshot is posted with the caption, I'm going to drive him to get it, guys. So this minor reality star is going to be driven to his vasectomy appointment by the husband of Hillary Duff. That's where we're at.
And I want to thank you for using the verbiage, quote, minorly famous, end quote, because I just need to keep elaborating that, like, Matthew Coma is not an A-lister. No. I'm not willing to say he's capital F famous. Like, we keep calling him Hillary Duff's husband for a reason. And yes, he, like, worked on a few Zedd songs. But I'm so sorry. I just see him as kind of like a nobody who has been posting his vasectomy on Main. And is he dying for attention so badly that he's DMing the current cast of Love is Blind?
Apparently, that's where his Valium-fueled brain went. He wanted answers to his questions immediately. But the thing is, it gets better. Because he DMs Joe Biden. And also Michelle Obama. You watching this shit? As in Love is Blind. And while Michelle does not respond to that inquiry of whether or not she's watching this shit, she responds to the Instagram story he posts of the screenshot of said inquiry with, LOL, I love this.
Okay.
Now, my question for you, Candace, do you think it was Michelle herself who said, LOL, I love this, or someone on her team? Because I don't know. I don't know what I think.
Okay. So I don't think it's her simply because LOL, she seems like the type of person who thinks LOL means lots of love. But I think it was Sasha. I think it was Sasha because Malia is too busy selling her little Sundance movies. Mm-hmm, Barack is literally at 10 Downing Street finding Kate Middleton, the real one. So I think it's Sasha. I think it is.
I don't think we'll ever know is the worst part of this. Much like we won't know for at least 10 years where Kate Middleton has been for the past 4 months.
True.
And also, unfortunately for us, this Instagram spree of havoc that Matthew went on did have to come to an end. He eventually posted a selfie with the caption, all right, the meds wore off and I'm going to get back to raising my kids and shit. Good times. And on that note, I do have one last thing I wish to say about Matthew Coma, which does involve Hillary Duff. It didn't happen last week, though. It happened last month on Valentine's Day, where Matthew posted a carousel of various paparazzi photos of Hillary Duff at the beach with her exes, with the caption, this Valentine's Day, I'd like to thank all the brave men who've saved my wife from dangerous oceans over the years. You don't go unnoticed, and your fearlessness is celebrated in our home every day. Hillary responded, you are truly ill, Matthew. And honestly, this is the exact kind of relationship I aspire towards. Like, this is giving Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston, unfortunately. Aww. These two crazy kids are just having fun.
Yeah, and she is right. We are truly ill.
It's so true. I almost began this next transition with, and speaking of crazy kids having fun, but I do think it's too early in the year to get canceled. Anyway, after the break, we're going to be back talking about the internet's favorite formerly incarcerated influencer. No, not Martha Stewart. Gypsy Rose Blanchard. And we're back. So, Candace, the show contains multitudes, as do we. And so I think it's time to talk about the opposite of a vasectomy.
A vasectomy.
No. I want to talk about someone who is doing the opposite of Matthew Coma, which is logging off social media, who is underexposing themselves, probably for the best.
Yeah. So, back in January, I had a really great conversation with Fox reporter Asia Romano about Gypsy Rose Blanchard, who on December 28th, 2023, was released from prison after serving 8 years following the brutal murder of her mother. And almost immediately, Blanchard became like a social media celebrity. She got over 8 million followers on Instagram, 10 million on TikTok. And I think people were just eating her up. I mean, she was on The View. She was doing Good Morning America exclusive. She's done multiple Lifetime projects. I mean, she was dropping these like very campy sound bites and IG comments about her husband's fire D.
It
was like a car accident. You can't stop looking. Now, we're going to get into Gypsy Rose's latest social media situation, but I have to say, Rachel, we did this episode while you were away having pina coladas with Colin Farrell on an undisclosed island. So first, what is your take on Gypsy Rose Blanchard?
I'm going to preface this by saying that I have a profound distaste for true crime because so much of it is just incredibly exploitative, insensitive to victims and their families, or overly reliant on police testimony, which in 2024, none of us should be. or some combination of the three. Fun. With Gypsy Rose specifically, I mostly find this incredibly sad because she has been manipulated and abused by her mother to the point where she felt like the only escape was a horrific crime. And then she spent her early adult years in prison after being launched onto the national stage for what was probably one of the worst moments of her life. I think she just needs to be left alone. And I feel like our collective obsession with her is only going to lead to bad things.
I think that's super correct. And I think the biggest question we were trying to answer back in January is like, why is Gypsy Rose the name on everyone's lips? Why are people on Twitter so obsessed with her? Should we be glorifying someone who like did plead guilty to the murder of her mother? And so there's a whole host of whys going on here, but let us fast forward to March 14th. When Gypsy Rose went on TikTok to post possibly her last video ever. So Gypsy Rose has basically decided to delete her Instagram and TikTok accounts for a few reasons. One, a source told People magazine that her decision was, quote, at the advisement of her parole officer so she won't get in trouble and go back to jail. Which, do we believe this?
I guess. I mean, I'm not a parole officer. I'm not law enforcement officer.
Right.
I think that makes sense given my general politics. Mm-hmm. But there are usually stipulations that come with being on parole, like checking in regularly with your parole officer or undergoing regular drug testing or like not associating with other formerly incarcerated people. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how social media would fit into that, but I could be convinced that posting too much and talking too much about her role in her mother's murder might in some way violate her parole agreement or put her at danger of being prosecuted for other crimes.
Yeah, and she also said that her dad also advised her to get off social media because she was living her life under a microscope. Yeah. Now, Blanchard did state that she is not entirely off social media because she has like a Finsta, which is a fake or private Instagram account, where she probably just lurks and doesn't have to comment or post with the pressure of being at Gypsy Rose Blanchard. Mm. But I want to play for you one of her last TikToks for now. Unto which she apologizes for her press cycle, essentially saying that she should have taken more accountability in those interviews about her role in the murder of her mother.
I keep reliving it in my head. That's my cross to bear. Am I guilty of my crime? Yes, I am. I feel like I can't be given a second chance to do better. I want to do better. There's lots of things that I feel like I can contribute to society if only given a chance.
So I kind of want to back up and trace what happened between the Gypsy Rose press cycle and now that has led her to delete all of her public accounts. But are you surprised that she is stepping back from the spotlight?
I am, mostly because I'm surprised when anyone does or does it of their own volition. I think it's good. To be quite honest, her influencer journey always stressed me out on a very deep level. In the least concerned, trolly way possible, like I do not know Gypsy Rose Blanchard. We are not familiar with each other. However, as an outside observer, I really think she just needs to take some time and learn how to live in the world on her own without millions of people watching. Mm-hmm. She went from being manipulated by her mother to prison. She's never been fully independent. And I'm not even sure she is now, given the fact that she got married in prison to a man that I feel like a lot of people are very skeptical about.
Yeah.
All to say, I am surprised that she seemingly took this step by herself, but it gives me hope that maybe she wants to lead a semi-normal life after this.
Yeah, because I think that her very public persona and the way she was kind of like lauded and praised both online and by the media was quite uncomfortable to watch. I don't think we knew how to take her or treat her, and so they chose instead to overexpose her in a way that honestly reminded me of Adnan Syed. Like, after we put out that episode with Asia, I actually went back on a Reddit and I started looking up what people have been saying lately about Adnan because, you know, he's been out of prison for about a year and a half. Yeah. And yet I still see so many people to this day debating whether he's guilty or innocent on Reddit. Like after Serial, after the HBO documentaries, they are still pulling up court documents and uploading Google Drives and litigating this case. Like, it's wild, but this is now happening to Gypsy Rose as we speak.
Right. And this is part of why I do not like true crime or true crime communities, because it makes people think that they have the ability and the skill to investigate crimes. And I'm not saying the police are necessarily better at it, because they're not. But I also don't know if a random person on Reddit is the best person to be doing this. And all it does is just feed into this idea that nothing is ever settled. And it's like, let these people live. Leave them alone. Anyway, but what's going on with Gypsy Rose? Like, what did she do that led to her detox? Was there an inciting incident, or was it really just like her parole officer was like, hey, baby girl, what if you logged off for a little while?
I think she's possibly just been too online, and I have the suspicion that she has maybe found her subreddit. But let's break it down. So about a week ago, people were trolling her on Instagram and TikTok, saying her husband, Ryan Anderson, was her brother.
What?
And they're obviously joking, but I do think there maybe requires a certain media literacy to distinguish trolls from, like, real assholes. And so to kill the speculation, she allegedly posted her husband's birth certificate on TikTok.
Oh, God. Mm. She, like, redacted it, right? Because there's a lot of information on a birth certificate. It's famously an important document you need for a lot of things.
Yeah. So, no, she posted the whole damn thing in full. Birth time, hospital, it's out there.
Ooh.
And she took it down. But there is a screenshot on Reddit that is redacted. But this was clearly a bad move. I mean, like, kind of rule one to being Insta-famous, you don't need to defend yourself against every hater. But I want to point to Exhibit B, something that happened in February, which is that Gypsy Rose had a YouTube channel that has also been taken down. And she allegedly responded to a comment that was screenshotted where someone asked her if she would consider using her platform to advocate for special needs individuals.
Mm-hmm.
I think the possible context for this is that Nicholas Godijan, who is her ex-boyfriend who also went to prison and is serving a life sentence for killing Blanchard's mother, he and his attorneys claimed that he was on the autism spectrum. And Blanchard responded to this comment with a long reply that said, quote, "I absolutely believe in rights for special needs individuals. My husband is a special education teacher, but I support people that actually have real disabilities, that they can't even function in normal society without guidance." End quote. The statement goes on and on. She brought up Godijan, calling him her co-defendant. And she kind of implied that he didn't have a real disability because he was, quote, well aware of his choice. And so that's why he's still in prison. But I bring this up because when this was posted on Reddit, the heading was, Gypsy really needs to get offline or filter everything through a PR person. And then someone commented, she's going to soon dig herself a hole too deep. And this kind of brings the Gypsy Rose fandom to a crossroads where I think people are starting to turn on her a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. And I'm not surprised, because at first there was a lot of sympathy for her return to society and her social media activity. Like, she was a 30-something-year-old woman using Instagram for the first time and kind of making up for the time she lost as a teenager and young adult who was in prison. But as someone who has been online in the intervening 8 years that she has not, man, has the internet changed. Mm-hmm. And her hyper-ascension to celebrity stardom was really odd and I would say uncomfortable for a lot of people involved, because, like, why is TMZ publishing photos of her at a hospital in Louisiana? Why is People Magazine writing articles about her dyeing her hair blonde? Why is she on Nick Vile's podcast? I don't think this is normal for anyone who is becoming famous for something not great, let alone someone who had a very, very insular adolescence who is not familiar at all with the way the internet works right now.
Right. And I also feel like there's a lot of confusion about what type of celebrity she is. Like, is she a reality star who needs to give exclusives to People Magazine in order to stay relevant? Does she need to stay relevant, or should she be given, like, a probation period where she's not online until she's acclimated to, like, a post-carceral private citizenship? I mean, I don't think Blanchard expected or necessarily wanted this type of attention and scrutiny at first. Because, you know, back in January, when she first got online, she said that the whole point of her having an Insta and a TikTok was, quote, to spread awareness of Munchausen by proxy, which is when a guardian seeks attention or sympathy by making their child ill or exaggerating their illness. And like, yes, Gypsy Rose Blanchard was probably the first time a lot of people knew what Munchausen by proxy was. But when people started making fan cams and edits of her, calling her queen and like expecting a lot from her, I think that changed her image.
Yeah. And maybe we should talk about her parole officer who allegedly advised her to get off the internet because anything she says could be used against her in a court of law. I mean, is the concern that she's going to reveal new information that leads her to a life sentence or reinstates her charges? Or is it just the overexposure?
Well, you know, Blanchard was released on parole, meaning she's still under supervision. And TMZ reported that while on parole, she is not allowed to contact Godejan, so her ex-boyfriend, who's currently in prison, digitally or via a third party. And she has to complete an outpatient mental health program. And she's not on house arrest. But I think there was some concern when she went on that Nick Vile podcast, The Vile Files, where she said, "I don't associate myself as a murderer, because if you think about it, yes, I had a part to play in it. I requested, I asked Nick for help." Then she explains who said what, that he did the actual kill, not her. And then she says,
"So when they say I'm a murderer, I don't identify as that. I'm an accessory. Absolutely. I'll take, yes, I did that. I am an accessory to murder."
And I think some people on like Reddit started asking, is this her saying she's not guilty? Like, if so, could that cause her parole to be revoked, which could lead to additional prison time? Like, what are the boundaries here? Because it sounds like they're not well defined, especially because not everyone on parole is doing like podcast press runs.
Kind of fast forwarding to her leaving Instagram and TikTok, I think she's having that moment that all of us have where we realize social media is quite bad for us. In one of her last videos, she called social media, quote, "a doorway to hell," which, iconic phrasing, mm-hmm. and that she wants to live her authentic life no matter how many followers she had. And I remember when she first got this huge following, there was some rationalizing of like, okay, she just got out of prison and she needs some source of income. Maybe she's going to do some SpawnCon and go the influencer route, considering how many people were interested in her content. Or maybe she's just going to go the public advocate route of using her Instagram as a platform to raise awareness about Munchausen's by proxy. And importantly, when Gypsy Rose entered prison in 2015, social media fame was kind of just becoming a thing. We were just recognizing what an influencer was and how much money they can make. It hadn't become the multi-billion dollar ecosystem that it is right now. And quite frankly, in 2015, it being social media famous just didn't demand as much of creators as it does now. And the people who have been doing it for a decade now would say the same thing. Influencing in 2015 versus influencing in 2024 is a completely different game. So it's entirely possible that Gypsy Rose thought it was going to be a different, less voyeuristic, less all the time, go, go, go. Here's a podcast. Here's GMA. Here's Hoda asking you questions. But it seems like the tables have really turned for her.
Yeah. And I think technology and social media has changed so much since Blanchard entered prison that this type of exposure is just so not normal. Like, I think about how when Adnan Syed was released, the first time he stepped onto like public property, he was sworn by reporters and cameras, and there were videos of him reconnecting with his family at home. And I just don't know if you should expose that much to us. Like, I don't know if we are owed that type of content from Adnan or Gypsy Rose, because the learning curve of being a private citizen in a public arena, the internet, is steep beyond description. Like, I don't think I could explain Get Ready With Me videos to like an alien from Area 51.
And we shouldn't have to. Those words are not in the Bible. So I guess the question I have for you, Candace, is do you think we're going to hear more from Gypsy Rose? Should we hear more from her?
Personally, no. But I will admit that back in January, I was like, the sky is the limit. Is she going to present at the Oscars? Is she going to guest host Jimmy Kimmel? Is she going to take over Chicken Shop Date? I don't know. How far are we taking this? But I do think stepping back from social media is the right thing to do. It's kind of the only thing you can do when you are acting like Selena Gomez, defending your husband's Fire D in the comments. Okay, that's the show. We'll be back in your feed on Saturday, so definitely subscribe. That way you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and a review in Apple or Spotify, and tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @icymi_pod, and you can always drop us a note at icymi@slate.com.
ICYMI is produced by Sierra Spragley-Ricks, Candace Slim, and me, Rachel Hampton. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's vice president of audio. See you online.
Or on Vasectomy Talk.